This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening, and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, we preview our upcoming trombone choir and horn ensemble recital, and an exciting evening of musical theater scenes here in the Green Center. The question you never ask answers, why is it called a French horn? We also have an operatic 5-minute iPod, and we talk with Josiah Rushing about the pressures of competing at the international level in the Percussive Arts Society solo competition. There are lots of exciting things happening this week in the School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. On Tuesday, April the 24th, in Thompson Recital Hall, we will have an evening of musical theater scenes. Joining me to chat about that is one of our voice professors, Dr. Carrie Jennings. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also two students, Elika Okerstrom and Anne Ravelli. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
So an evening of music theater scenes. How do we get to this? This is not the music theater ensemble, so
that's
how do you guys do that?
Well, in the fall, we have a course where we do opera scenes, and that's when we actually do the musical theater production. And so in the spring, when we do an opera production, we have a course that is musical theater scenes.
Ah, so we've got both covered at all times.
That's right.
What is this course like? Everybody just comes in and brings in their favorite Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Not exactly. I treat it like any scenes program class, where during the first day, any student that has registered for the class sings whatever they want to sing. And then I decide from there what sorts of scenes and songs we're going to do. I, of course, give them the opportunity to say, hey, this is a composer that I really like. I'd really like to work on this. Or on the flip side, I've done a whole lot of this. Can we not do that? And so what we've decided to do this year, partially because we're going to be doing Into the Woods as the fall musical, I thought, well, without doing anything from Into the Woods, we'll at least give the students a really good sampling of Sondheim.
Ooh, great. Yeah. I'm there.
So, yeah. And so we came up kind of with this concept of old and new. And so the old, if you want to call it that, is the first half of the program, which is all Sondheim. So we're going to be doing some of the famous scenes from Sweeney Todd, and from Sunday in the Park with George, and from Company. And then the second half of the program is going to be all new repertoire, at least over the last few years. And many of these composers probably have been influenced in some form or fashion by Sondheim.
I don't think there's a musical theater composer on the planet now that has not been influenced by Sondheim.
Exactly,
I hear so many people, and I go, well, that's just Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah, well, it's true. Yeah, and so in the second half, we'll be doing some scenes from The Wild Party and from Edges, which is technically a musical theater song cycle, which was written by two students at University of Michigan, I think it was. They decided to compose this because they weren't particularly pleased with the roles they were being cast in. And so they've composed this. And we're also going to do some scenes from Parade, which is, of course, Jason Robert Brown. And then finally from Next to Normal, which is essentially a rock musical.
Right.
So
right.
Got a lot of new stuff and the great old stuff by Sondheim.
So, Elika, what are you singing?
Well, I'm in some stuff from Company, the Sondheim. And then I'm also doing stuff from Edges and Parade as well.
So what's your favorite?
I love the stuff from Company. Before I started really looking at stuff from opera, musical theater was my first love, hands down. I was the girl who had her Wicked soundtrack on all the time and knew all the words. And but in my high school, we focused a lot more on the classical side of musical theater. So, I mean, give me Rodgers and Hammerstein and Gilbert and Sullivan, and I can do that in a heartbeat. So Sondheim was really a challenge for me, but it's really taught me kind of how to enjoy this kind of music, and it's really fun to sing.
Yeah, I directed Company a few years ago, and I fell in love with it even more than I thought I loved it already.
Yep.
What a great show, and so many great tunes. I don't think you can write a tune better than Barcelona. Actually, you can. Because he did.
Yeah, right.
And we're in another show that he did, but, you know, I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. How about you, Anne?
I'm also singing in one of the songs from Company, and then I'm in Wild Party, which I had never heard of that musical before, but it's a lot of fun, and the music's actually really cool. So it's been kind of fun to get to know shows that I otherwise wouldn't become familiar with the music with.
Somehow I think Wild Party would be a good draw on a college campus.
I would think so.
There you go. Exactly. It's fun music. Yeah. So.
Right. How is this different from other performing opportunities that you guys have here at DePaul?
For me, at least, this is really refreshing. Usually vocal performance is very classical based, and my usual repertoire, I would never sing anything like this. So it's really great to have a structured opportunity to explore this, because my general repertoire, I would never get to do Sondheim or anything even remotely new in terms of singing and stuff from Edges. So I've really liked that opportunity.
Mm. And what Elika is doing, which is a whole lot of fun. You know, I'm used to hearing Elika because she has this wonderfully large, beautiful mezzo voice. She's actually singing a patter song because she's doing Not Getting Married Today.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, so
the lyrics of that tune.
So fun.
And they'll find me floating in the Hudson with the other garbage.
Favorite. Yeah. And Anne gets a big production number that was choreographed by Jared Norman, who is one of our graduating music education majors who's out doing his student teaching right now. She gets to do a lot of salsa in her big production number there.
I get lifted up at one point.
Yes.
Well, all right. What's the tune there?
That's called Raise the Roof.
Oh.
From Wild Party.
So it's really...
That's funny because we had an orchestra concert that the finale of it was another piece called Raise the Roof.
I don't think it was the same one. Probably
not. Slightly a different piece. Yeah.
Same title, total different idea.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I think that it was Brahms that said, it's a tough world out here when we all live in the shadow of Beethoven. And I think every musical theater composer feels that about Sondheim. Is that true?
I love Sondheim and I like really like singing, but I think the other stuff has something just totally different to offer. I mean, granted, they all have a lot of their roots in Sondheim, but I mean, just the subject matter seems so much more modernized. I mean, we're singing a song all about Facebook that I think is like hysterical.
Which is a fun show.
So, I mean, it's different in its own way, but I think they're both equally really great.
You know, the thing is that prior to Sondheim, a person would be involved in a musical and they would be having their conversations and the dialogue would go on, and then suddenly they would stop and they would sing a song about that particular emotion. And so we walked up to a spot and we stood still and we sang a song. And then we dramatically, we walk up to a spot and we stop and we sing a song. Sondheim totally put that on its ear. So
it's
just drama all the time and everything's sung, and we're just pushing our way through this. And then every composer after him has been kind of trying to figure out, well, how do we navigate and do something as dramatic for musical theater as Sondheim did? Have any of these young composers done that? Have they made major innovations to the form?
I think in many ways it's evolved in subject matter more than anything.
Yeah,
and it sort of relates. I mean, Company is such an amazing show, and there's so much theatrical realism going on in that. But I think also in some of the newer stuff, you get a new perspective.
I love Jason Robert Brown, and I think that stuff seems so real, not just in the way that it's written, but like the text that's used, everything is so applicable, I would say, even though I mean, I don't know Parade particularly well, but I know it takes place like a lot more long ago, but I think the social issues that are being dealt with
are the same.
Are a lot more upfront. I mean, you'll look at shows like South Pacific from back when that was composed in the 50s, like still at that time, very socially controversial, essentially. But now they've kind of taken it to a new level and really put it more out there.
Right. It's definitely more in the forefront.
Yes, Rent really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Rent really sells
I think what you're going to find musically in these newer works that Sondheim really changed, and much like what you were talking about, is that the dialogue does not happen just on its own.
Right.
And then the music starts. Dialogue happens in the music, and then the singing just comes from that.
Exactly.
And the music has already started. And so it very much is operatic in that way. In fact, that was one of my master's degree topics, was Sondheim as opera composer.
Wow.
And these newer works do mirror that in many ways.
So what's the highlight of the night?
Oh my gosh, there's so many.
You just have to come.
Exactly.
It's gonna be good. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
then the tale of Sweeney Todd. His skin was pale and his eye was odd. He shaved the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again. He trod a path that few have trod, did Sweeney Todd. A demon barber of Fleet Street.
He kept a shop in London town, of fancy clients and good renown. And what if none of their souls were saved? They went to their maker impeccably shaved. By Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street.
Hi, my name's Case Nafziger, and I am a fifth-year vocal performance major. I'll be giving a recital of American vocal music on Thursday, May 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. I'd love to see you there.
Our next guest on Music for Life is our trombone professor, Jim Beckel. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
Jim is a remarkable trombonist, and we've had him here at DePauw for many years, despite the fact that he already has a full-time gig with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And we're very fortunate to have faculty that are of such caliber. They're involved with one of the world's great orchestras and also here teaching at DePauw. So we're glad to have you here. Now, how long have you been at DePauw?
I think this may be my 40th year or 41st year. Yeah.
So I've started when you were six. Yes, six. Yeah, I was born with a trombone. Now, and how long have you been with the ISO?
This is my 43rd season.
Wow.
I will let people do the math. I did get the job right out of IU, and I was 20 at the time. So I did start awfully young.
Wow. So you've seen a lot of conductors in your time at ISO, haven't you?
I started with Isler Solomon, John Nelson, Raymond Lepard, Amario Vanzago, and of course now Christoph Urbanski.
It was great to have you guys here. What an incredible concert you guys put on.
Thank you. It was so good to be here. It's great to play in this wonderful hall and be here at DePauw.
You know, I'll tell you, I'm going to betray my allegiances here, but I'll tell you what I liked the best was this was such a brass-heavy concert. got to hear you guys play.
Yes.
Really fine work there. And we have, speaking of brass, we have a trombone choir concert coming up, right?
Absolutely. Coming up April 25th on a Wednesday, 7:30, at Thompson Recital Hall. It's actually a combined recital between the horn studio and the trombone studio. It'd be trombone choir music as well as horn choir music. A really lovely night for great brass playing.
The truth is, people are probably surprised to know that there is music written for trombone choir. But, you know, we're used to hearing symphonies and choirs and that kind of stuff, but to hear a trombone choir is a relatively unusual thing outside of a school of music, is it not?
It is. Trying to think back to the history of it, certainly one of the more famous trombone choirs was at Eastman School of Music with Emory Remington back in the 60s, actually. It was a time when there were trombonists in every orchestra that had come from his studio, and he really developed a beautiful sonority. You know, as trombonists, it is more responsible for us to have a blend and a concept of a section than perhaps some other sections. Of course, every section in the orchestra has to have that, but notably, the most famous moments in orchestral repertoire are more times than not the trombone choir concept in a Brahms symphony or whatever. It's the blend, it's the balance of the trombones.
And what a beautiful sound. The trombone, when played well. I started my career as a fifth grade band director. And the sounds that a fifth grader can make out of a trombone are pretty frightening.
Yes.
It's amazing what kind of sound a young person can get. And then when you hear one played well, I don't think there's any instrument, in fact, that goes through a greater change from just the first noise you can make out of it to its finished product than the trombone. The trombone goes from being one of the most heinous sounds you've ever heard when you first pick it up to one of the most beautiful sounds on earth. It is an amazing instrument, and especially when you hear it in a choir.
Yeah, and you know, I do agree with you in that regard. Certainly French horn probably becomes the candidate of greatest achievement later in life. But when you start, the trombone, I think, is the most challenging because you don't push down the first valve and get the right note. I mean, you have to find these obscure positions on the slide, just like a cellist would have to. And so in learning the very beginning essentials, this is a greater challenge, I believe.
So tell me a little bit about what we'll hear on this program.
Yes, well, speaking about trombone rep that was originally written for the trombone, we have this wonderful piece by Peter Atherton to close our part of the recital. And I think it's one of the best quartets written for trombone ensemble. It includes an entrata, waltz, chorale, and finale. Atherton was an English trombonist, played in the UK in the Birmingham area, tragically had an early death in a car accident. But before his passing, he really got quite a nice trombone quartet into the repertoire that is just really a special piece, beautiful second movement.
Oh, wow.
And we're also going to be featuring a former student from DePauw, John Chittum, was a former student here, now working on his doctorate at Kansas State in composition. And when he was here, he got to write one of his, actually, I think this is his Opus 1 for a trombone quartet.
Wow.
And we're going to revisit that in this recital. It really speaks of John's talent and where he was headed in his career while he was here. Then we do two transcriptions, one from Mendelssohn, the Equality No. 3, and a very famous Elsa's processional, the Wagner-Lohengrin excerpt from the end of Act 2, when, of course, Elsa is marrying Lohengrin.
We hope we finally get her into the cathedral. She's been processing for a long time.
And it was another one of those woe is me operas where it just doesn't work out at the end.
No.
But it's a beautiful procession and typical Wagner, gorgeous, lovely music.
And, you know, there's so many ways that we could end this segment. We could play you some examples of some great trombone choir music from our archives. Or we could share with you that Jim is actually also a fine composer.
Oh,
and his music has been played all over. And we were fortunate to actually play a very, and I haven't had the chance yet to tell you this, how much I love the piece of yours that we played at the Holiday Gala.
Oh,
you know, we're always looking for new and exciting music to play. And especially the Holiday Gala where you want people to come together. And that was about the hippest arrangement. Bravo on that. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
You know, when I lived outside of D.C., the United States Air Force Band always did a show called Christmas in July. And they got together on the lawn in the White House in July. And they played Christmas music in the middle of July so that people would come in and donate toys for tots and they could get a head start. So maybe we'll do a little bit of that in the middle of our show as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This week's question you never asked comes to us from Music for Life staff member Sam Crocker. What's our question this week, Sam?
Our question deals with why a French horn is called a French horn when it's not French. And, you know, similarly, why English horn, it's not English either, so why do we call it?
Right. So we have a couple of horns that actually have funny names. The French horn, was it invented in France?
It's descendant from French hunting horns. So in a way, yes, it is. Ah. Its ancestors were French, but it is not itself French.
Okay, so their ancestors were French.
Yes. So what they did originally, I mean, people would just blow through shells, like conch shells and just curved animal horns. Right. But eventually it kept getting longer and longer so you could play more notes. And they ended up...
They had to wind it up.
They wound it up.
You can do this at home with a garden hose.
Sure.
And a simple kitchen funnel.
Sure.
If you take a garden hose, cut off a short length of it, any length you want, roll it up like a French horn, stick the plastic funnel in the end of it, and then buzz your lips into the other end, you'll make a French horn.
Yeah, there you go. Homemade French horn. So what they did with these was there was a big open space in the middle because you wrapped it around like that garden hose. Mm-hmm. And so they would use them to signal during the hunt. And then they'd toss them over their shoulder because they could carry them with the big hole in the middle.
Right.
So that's what they were used for in France.
So this is an instrument that's been around since the 1500s.
Yeah, used in opera, yeah.
Yeah, and?
The hunting horns that were used in France, composers heard it and said, well, you know, we should write some music for this. This sounds nice, or we should include it in the orchestra because it would go well. And so that moved it to Germany, and it played in all the orchestras, and that's when it started being more of a German horn. Ah. They didn't use the actual French horns, but the name stuck.
Yeah, so, okay. And yeah. What about the English horn?
That is curious because it's neither English nor a horn.
Other than that, they got it right, though.
Yeah, other than that, yeah. It was originally descendant from the oboe, and there are a couple myths about how it got the name, and one of them is that it was originally called the cor anglais, mm-hmm. with an E at the end, which means angled, you know, it's mm-hmm. bent. And in translation, it was somehow called the cor anglais with an A-I-S at the end,
right.
Which means English.
So it went from angled to English.
Yes, because the same pronunciation and that kind of thing. Another possibility that has been argued is that in medieval paintings and drawings, there were angels playing horns that looked like the English horn, so they called it angelic horn because of the angels playing it. And that word in the Middle High German that described it also means English.
So we have an angled angelic English horn.
Yes.
I got it.
It's really confusing.
It is.
It's just a bunch of mistranslations.
Yeah, the truth is that maybe music's not the universal language.
Okay. Possibly not.
Thanks for joining us, Sam.
Thank you.
Joining us for this week's 5-Minute iPod segment is our viola professor, Dr. Nicole Brockman. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So you're stuck on a desert island, your iPod is defective and only holds 5 minutes. What is it?
Well, I should admit that I'm going to cheat, and I'm probably not the only faculty member who's cheating on this assignment. I would have to say that my pick would be Tosca, the opera by Puccini, which is obviously more than 5 minutes.
Yeah, just a few.
But I'm choosing it because I think that pretty much anywhere you would drop the needle in Tosca, in that 5-minute period, whatever you happen to get, you would hear some heart-rendingly vivid depictions of the emotions that we all experience. And in the opera, there's joy and there's hope and there's fear and there's terror and there's anger and there's love and sort of everything all rolled up into one. So any 5-minute section that my iPod happened to play on any given day.
So if your iPod was indexed and you wanted to push a button, could you do it? Where would you go? In that great work.
In this whole opera? Yeah. You know, I find the character of Tosca so interesting. She is a woman who has her whole life been a good girl. She brings flowers to church. She's very religious. She's very proper. And she is surrounded by people who kind of take advantage of her. Mm-hmm. In the section that I would choose, she has just been through this whole ordeal in which her lover, who has gotten involved with some political rebels, has been tortured kind of not before her eyes, but before her ears, mm-hmm. by a very corrupt chief of police who has made no secret of the fact that he wants to get her into bed. And the deal that she has been offered is that he will spare her lover's life if she agrees to sleep with him. And she has this terrible, terrible moment where she doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. She is a woman who has been pushed beyond the boundaries of anything that she knows how to deal with. And so my 5 minutes would start at the moment after she has agreed mm-hmm. to this sort of soul-crunching deal. Mm-hmm. And she is despondent and desperate, and she doesn't know what's going to happen. And while this corrupt chief of police is pretending to write her a safe conduct that's going to get her out of the country, she sees on the table a knife. And it's this question of, what is she going to do? Is she going to pick it up? If she's going to pick it up, who is she going to use it on? Right? And finally, you know, we see her going through this psychological change. And eventually, the chief of police is finished with this note. He says, ah, Tosca, finally you're mine. And she takes the knife and she stabs him. And she says, questo il bacio di Tosca. This is Tosca's kiss.
We should have warned folks that there was a spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay.
Somebody dies in an opera?
Someone died
really?
In an opera. It's never happened before. Actually, when Dr. Jennings, who was our very first five-minute iPod segment, chose La Boheme, I said, you cannot go wrong choosing Puccini. And he is our first repeat. So now here we are. We have a repeat.
Yep.
It is Puccini. And the truth is, you could drop the needle not just anywhere in Tosca. You could drop the needle anywhere in Puccini.
I think you're right.
And you would have a great time. Yep. Excellent choice. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
davanti a lui tremava tutta Roma.
Earlier on the show, we were talking to Professor Jim Beckel about the upcoming recital that the trombone ensemble will be performing on. Also on that recital will be the horn ensemble. So joining me to chat about the horn ensemble concert around the corner is Mariah Hersham, David Acton, and Sam Crocker. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
People might be surprised to know that there is such a thing as a horn ensemble. So this is a group made up of only French horns.
Yep. That's correct.
How many of you are there?
There's seven of us.
So do all seven of you play all the time?
Pretty much, yeah.
Really?
Well, we have some smaller ensembles, like of four horns that we do, and we split up and do that. But.
Great. So how does this work? You guys rehearse every week together as a group?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just divide up into sections to do different things?
Yeah, we rehearse on Monday evenings for an hour. And usually, depending on what our professor wants to do, he does the whole ensemble with all of us, and then he breaks in for the quartets, for the smaller groups.
I see. So what are you playing on this concert?
We are playing a really cool arrangement of the Titanic.
Really?
Yeah.
From the film score?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, neat. It's really cool. What's interesting is that we're actually incorporating other horn players, like DePaul faculty members that play horn as well. So we're going to have 12.
So who does that include? What faculty members also play horn?
There are a couple that play for graduation sometimes. With
So they're not music faculty,
right.
But they're
right.
Faculty.
Right.
Isn't that fantastic?
Or just DePaul connections.
Jump DePaul alumni.
A lot of DePaul
horn.
Graduates, yeah.
You can never have too much horn.
Yeah.
Right. Very true.
Yeah. So what's your favorite piece on this program?
Probably the Titanic. That's
and what
the
else
fun
are you doing
play.
That you love?
We're doing a Bach piece arranged by Lowell Shaw, and I get to play a little horn part on that, so it's really fun.
Yeah, I think people might be surprised at the range of a French horn. You know, what's the range of a French horn? 40 yards if you warm up. really, what is the range of a French horn?
Four and a half.
Yeah, four and a half
octaves. Yeah.
That's an amazing range. There's not very many instruments that can do that, which shows why horn is really one of those interesting instruments, because it's also in the woodwind quintet,
even though...
It's not made out of wood.
Yeah, we always get joked about it. They're like, you're not really a brass instrument. You're a woodwind.
Yeah, that's right. You're not welcome in either camp, because the brass guys consider you a traitor.
They're just jealous.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a jealousy thing. Yeah.
I can't remember if it was the horns or the trombones that Richard Strauss said this about, but he said, never look at the horns. It only encourages them.
That was the trombones.
It was Strauss. He passed the buck. There you go. Well, it's nice to have you guys on. We'll look forward to the recital.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
So I'm here with Josiah Rushing, who was here with us earlier in this semester as we were talking about the Music for the 21st Century Festival and Joseph Schwantner. And there we were talking about the work with Schwantner's second percussion concerto. Today we brought him back to talk a little bit about his experience with Schwantner's first percussion concerto. Welcome, Josiah.
Thank you.
You and Schwantner seem to go back a little ways because you just did his first concerto, right?
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that. You did it here first.
Yes, I did the first movement of the first concerto for the concerto competition last spring.
Yeah,
last
for our concerto competition here at the PAW, which happens every spring, you got the chance to solo on this challenging Schwantner first concerto.
Right.
But then you didn't just end there. What else?
I applied for the PAS solo competition, which involved using a concerto. In the first round, you just had to do one movement. So I reused the first movement of the first concerto.
Oh, what a great opportunity, by the way, that here you are as an undergraduate having the opportunity to perform with a full orchestra and then use that recording of you soloing with full orchestra in a competition.
Yeah. Well, actually, I didn't use that particular recording. The DVD for the first round, I had to make one continuous shot. So I had to do the pianists. And then go from the other solo pieces
so
that
from
I had.
Oh, wow.
So, and then the second round, I got the chance to learn the whole concerto because that was the requirement. And I was really excited about that. First, second, and third, recorded that this summer and for the second round.
And for the second round, you submit a DVD of the entire concerto. And then what happens?
And then you have the concerto and then like three other solo pieces that are all one continuous shot. And you wait and get an email and see what happens. So, and it turned out I got the runner-up to the last position that would go. So I guess fifth place.
Right. That's really quite an accomplishment. First of all, that's fifth place of all the percussionists in the world that are up for that. You know, that's a remarkable achievement for an undergraduate, especially a junior undergraduate. But also, weren't you the highest placing American?
I was.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you very
That's
much.
That's quite an accomplishment. And it's a real tribute to Dr. Barber and her work with, with you in the studio and the opportunities that you had here at DePauw to play with full orchestra as a soloist and all of the opportunities that you get when you're at a small school and people will really focus on you as an individual.
Yeah. My teachers have sacrificed a lot for me and my work, and they continue to do so. So
and you've
I
made us all
them.
Very proud. Yeah. You've really achieved very well. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay.
So we actually have two recordings of Josiah performing this Schwantner work. Once last year when he was a concerto competition winner and performed it with the orchestra. And then once here where he performed it solo for Joseph Schwantner. So we've decided we like this newest version because it was in Schwantner's presence. So this is the second movement of that concerto recorded live in Thompson Recital Hall with the composer present. Thank you. Well, that wraps up our show this week, and we're glad you could join us at Music for Life, Music from DePaul. Our student producers are Sam Crocker, Adam Lumen, Anna Gadula, and Phil Pasqua. Our show is produced and engineered by Matthew Champagne and recorded live in Studio B of the Green Center for the Performing Arts. I'm Mark McCoy. I'm the executive producer of Music for Life and Dean of the School of Music. And we're glad you could join us once again. And we hope that you'll join us next Sunday night at 6 p.m. on WGRE for Music for Life. You can also catch us on the podcast, available at iTunes. And you can email us at musicforlife@depauw.edu. Have a great week.
It's Music for Life.